Good evening and welcome once again, dear ones. It is so good to see all of your faces with us this evening as we come together to take our place, to rest in a circle of intention, to listen deeply and come together for a conscious exchange, each in our own place. The Christ candle is again lit as a reminder that even in seeming darkness, there is always light to behold, to enliven, to transmit, and to heal. And in lighting the Christ candle, we affirm it for ourselves and for all creation. And we also consciously place ourselves under the canopy of the work. Glory be to God transcendent, and to God omnipresent, and to God immanent, as it was in the beginning, is now, and will be forever. Amen. So tonight, as we are again sharing and receiving ideas and experiences about memories, about trauma, about healing, wholeness, and the fullness of being a conscious being in an evolutionary process, we are invited to participate consciously in the spiritual journey. And I recalled some words from Thomas Keating that he wrote on his own reflections following the events that occurred on September 11th, 2001. And as I was reading those words, they seemed very appropriate for our time and place. So I will share them with you, and we bring Thomas Keating into our presence this evening and celebrate his life. What I saw was an image of the crucifixion of Christ extended to the whole of humanity, extended in this enormous, visible, and public way, surely one of the most extraordinary signs of all time. As a consequence, its universal character, as seen by everyone in the world, must be a message for all humanity of the most profound kind. The human family is essentially a single species. Just how deep this unity actually is still to be grasped by most of us. For one thing, it would not have been possible for Christ to take the whole human family into himself, unless the whole human species itself was intricately one. This understanding of the unity of the human family is central to Christianity. Our spiritual journey, especially with contemplative prayer, together with its practices for daily life, and we would also include the work, are processes of becoming aware of just how profound this unity is with God, ourselves, other people, other living beings, the earth, and all creation. The present circumstances seem to be teaching us that we are accountable for everyone on earth, past, present, and to come. There is no way of separating our fate from the fate of others. This may mean that we share in the fate of those who are suffering, or at the very least, it means that we feel for those who do, and do what we can to manifest the goodness and tenderness of God through the practice of compassion and genuine love of one another. Thank you, Father Thomas. May we come to know this from the deepest level of our being and live by it. Amen. aware now, as we prepare to move deeper into ourselves and into all creation, that our being bodies encompass dimensions, visible and invisible, invisible, conscious and unconscious, the heights, the depths, the widths and the lengths. We prepare ourselves to be fully present. Each of us is here for a reason. Each of us carry many life stories and events and connections. What each of us brings matters. How we come matters. How we participate matters. For that is what we are emanating out into the world. So we place ourselves, center ourselves once again in a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the influences pouring forth from the conscious circle of humanity. And we take in, prepare to take in deeply with high valuation this evening, with back upright, still and contained, letting go of all tension and constriction, present here. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day and through this world. Everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope. All affirming, all denying. And we hold it, lift it, as offering, reconciled as food for being. And we ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. May our hearts reach the people of Ukraine, especially at this time. We hand over the complexities of the day, the plans for tomorrow, the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And we enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina. Our reading will be read three times, with a silent pause between each reading. And we are invited to take it in deeper each time and see what the message is for us in our own particular life, just at this moment. A bruised reed will not be broken, and a smoldering wick will not be stuffed out. In faithfulness, God will bring forth healing. Trauma and all its tentacles that stretch out into the weave of our life story are only a part of the formation of our personality. We are much more. The trauma isn't our essence. It is a part of us, not all of us, and can be used to serve other parts of us. We have a choice now. We may not have had a choice then. Our choice now is to work or not to work on ourselves, to shake and breathe or to tighten and constrict. It's a powerful invitation to consciously chosen love through our calming, embodied practices. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you wish to subject yourself and actually falling under this influence. A bruised reed will not be broken, and a smoldering wick will not be snuffed out. In faithfulness, God will bring forth healing. Trauma and all its tentacles that stretch out into the weave of our life story are only a part of the formation of our personality. We are much more. The trauma isn't our essence. It is a part of us, not all of us, and can be used to serve other parts of us. We have a choice now. We may not have had a choice then. Our choice now is to work or not to work on ourselves, to shake and breathe, or to tighten and constrict. It's a powerful invitation to consciously chosen love through our calming embodied practices. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you want to subject yourself and actually falling under this influence. A bruised reed will not be broken, and a smoldering wick will not be snuffed out. In faithfulness, God will bring forth healing. Trauma in all its tentacles that stretch out into the weave of our life story are only a part of the formation of our personality. We are much more. The trauma isn't our essence. It is a part of us, not all of us, and can be used to serve other parts of us. We have a choice now. We may not have had a choice then. Our choice now is to work or not to work on ourselves, to shake and breathe or to tighten and constrict. It's a powerful invitation to consciously chosen love through our calming embodied practices. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you want to subject yourself and actually falling under this influence. Lord, have mercy. Christ, have mercy. Amen. And so it is. You're now invited to share with us and to give us the gift that you received from this passage, or perhaps it was gazing upon the statue of Mary, that she somehow came and spoke to you in some way. And I'd like to particularly invite someone who has rarely, if ever, shared, because I know that something has moved in your heart. So you can just indicate your willingness and courage by using the raised hand function. Martin, good evening. Welcome.
Good evening. I heard formation of personality, and in this week of looking at what I picked was the emotional center, and finding how my personality in the formation of that personality has really done a real good job of hiding perhaps the trauma that I can't really acknowledge that I've had. So it's my wish to have the courage and the faith to go ahead and let be seen what I don't want to see. My intellectual center just insists on protecting me in that way. But like the video says, I'm just frozen.
Yeah.
With those emotional traumas.
Thank you, Martin, for your vulnerability. Frida.
Okay. So I'm a slow coming to this work, although it's been on my radar for many years. And the first 2 years of the school, I would occasionally read the emails, but that was all. Then the next 2 years, I listened to the recordings occasionally. And this year, I made a choice, and so this reading spoke to me that I have a choice to do this work. But it's going to take me a year to actually take that next step. Yes. So that was very nice that you said, sort of drawing out one of the people that hadn't spoken. So I just want to say I am here.
Yes.
And I love the work, but I'm just very slow to warm to it.
Ah, well, welcome, Frida. You are among friends. I know. Many of us have experienced the very same thing. So it's safe here. And thank you for your courage this evening. Thank you. Welcome. Stephanie, please.
Hello, everyone. Today's reading, the end is what really spoke to me. That quote, I'm always struck by it when we read about it, that you choose the influence that you want to fall under and then actually fall under it. And I'm usually caught in the actually, because so often I have this ideal that I'm gonna do something and I don't actually do it. But today I was gazing at Mary, and she's been very important to me. And I really noticed that the word he uses is falling under that influence, not putting ourselves under that influence or something else. And I know that he's very meticulous with word choice. So today I just imagined falling, you know, under Mary, like fall on your knees kind of. And what that is like, as opposed to putting myself under an influence, what it would mean instead to fall mm-hmm. under an influence, and particularly of Mary. And I always see her as such a, there's nothing she can't forgive. There's nothing she won't. I think of that story where they say that if someone doesn't let you in the front door, Mary will let you in the back. And that was really coming to me to meet me today. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much for that, Stephanie. So much. I also will take a fresh look as a result of your words. Thank you. So we have time for another. Someone else who has been dipping into the water and getting deeper into the work, perhaps. Kelly, welcome.
Hello. I was moved by the images of a broken reed and a smoldering wick. Mm. And just the tenderness of that image, that something that is broken or not quite alive, but is not thrown away or dismissed or or seen as useless. Mm. And I know we live in a throwaway culture, so it made me think of what parts of myself could I have that compassion for and that kind of tenderness. That nothing is wasted, and even when we don't feel quite alive or aflame, that we are cared for.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Kelly. Nothing is wasted. Anyone else? Lynn, welcome.
I was attracted to the image in there where it was talking about breathing and shaking, or constricting and tightening. And initially, it brought up what it was talked about in the email about the deer escaping from a predator. And that was just such a vivid image for me. But as I've taken that image kind of more into me, I can remember traumatic experiences where I was able to breathe and shake, and I know that it is behind me. It's just a memory.
Yes.
But I also know that there are experiences that I did not breathe and shake, and it has become constricted and tightened. And when I think of those memories, I can, you know, through my intellectual center, try and talk myself out of it, but it just doesn't work. And it's definitely stuck inside and requires additional work. And so I guess I, with courage, want to face some of those experiences and those constrictions and do what I can with my choice now to breathe and open up.
Indeed. May it be so, Lynn. Thank you. And Ken, we'll close this portion with you. Welcome.
Thank you. Mary came to me actually last week on retreat. Spent the whole week with Mary pondering. So when I saw this image, it just kind of extended that pondering. What I was drawn to last week and even today about the image was her eyes. Last week, what I saw was just kind of a gazing downward, which to me, for me, what this meant was narrow my field of vision. Don't necessarily try to see everything that's going on and look so far out. What I saw, and be open and available to kind of what's right in front of me. What I saw in this image, her eyes are clearly closed. And to me, that is a very trusting, she's trusting in her body. She's trusting in intuition. She's got her arm extended and one arm on her heart that is just welcoming what's ever coming and very trusting and not needing to know. So that's what I took away.
Thank you. May it be so. So thank you, everyone. And what came to you in your hearts in some way is being shared among all of us. And now it is my delight and to welcome again Christine O'Brien into our community. And we are honored that in the midst of a very full schedule with many people competing for your time and attention that you choose to be with us, and we welcome you and bless you.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? So I wanted to start this evening with a practice and just, you know, that notion of releasing, breathing and shaking and doing the things that release that burden that we carry in our body. And that's what all of the information that you got in your email was about yoga and all the things that can help you do that releasing process. And knowing that there are very simple things that facilitate that. So this is a practice where we'll use our voice to make the sound ah. And ah is the sound of creation. It's the sound, if you think of names of God in every tradition, it has that ah sound in it. And we'll say four syllables, sa, and sa refers to birth or co-creation, ta, which refers to interconnection and life, na, which we can think of as death to our false self, and ma, which is rebirth or spiritual transformation. So when you, I'm going to have you use your hands and you'll place them on your lap, but you'll touch your thumb to your pointer finger as you say ta, sa, I'm sorry, you'll inhale and then exhale to say the word sa. And then you'll move your thumb to your middle finger, inhale, exhale, with the syllable ta. Move again your thumb to your ring finger. Inhale. And then exhale the syllable na. And then inhale. Exhale the syllable ma as you touch your thumb to your pinky. So it's sa, ta, na, ma. And we want to kind of hold that syllable and actually vocalize it. So hear it, feel it in your voice, and feel the vibration that it creates in your body. So we'll go through that a few times together. I'd like you to just get comfortable in your chairs. Sit up tall in a dignified fashion. Hopefully you can bring your ears back over your shoulders to open your airway. And then slide your tongue to the roof of your mouth, either pressing it against the entire roof or bringing it back to your soft palate, that soft area at the top of your roof of your mouth, and holding it there, whatever is more comfortable for you. That should open your airway. You might have to move it around as we say these syllables. But embracing the sound especially. Inhale. Sa. Inhale. Ta. Inhale. Na. Inhale. Ma. Sa. Na. Ma. Sa. Ta. Na. Ma. And then you can just take a couple of deep breaths and relax. So this is just one example of something quick and easy to do to shift and reset, especially keeping in mind that it's that whole co-creation transformation process that can occur with the use of combining these modalities. So I have a lot of patients who will use this when they're sitting in a waiting room or they're just in a place where they want to feel comfortable in their own skin, and you can go to that simple practice. So I'm going to share my slides now, hopefully. And so this is the depletion to renewal grid. And we hope with these practices that we'll be able to shift from the depletion side to the renewal side. So when we're in the depletion side, we're dumping cortisol. We talked about that last week. Cortisol is your stress hormone. It lasts in your system for 12 hours once you get triggered. And unless you do something to shift from that, usually frustration or resentment, to gratitude and appreciation, then you're going to continue to dump cortisol, because we talked about the hand model of the brain. So you've been triggered because whatever's happened, your brain Googles and then it connects it in its data bank to something that was a threat to you at one time. And then your emotional brain becomes connected, your limbic system, and you flip your lid. So your higher brain, which is your center of judgment and reason and focus and concentration, goes offline, and you start living in this Bermuda Triangle where you're just recreating that story and pattern, which wires you more into that situation. So what we want to do is, if you think of this as your brain, this is your neck, this is your body, we want to go to our heart. And we want to go to our breath, so our lungs and our heart, and begin to breathe. And that brings your heartbeat to beat rhythm from chaos to what we call coherence. So it actually changes your heartbeat to beat rhythm so that you have better heart rate variability. It changes your autonomic nervous system. So we talked last week of being in that fight, flight, freeze, which is sympathetic. And we want to move into parasympathetic, rest and repair and thrive. And we want to shift from anger, anxiety, frustration, resentment, apathy, sadness into a different emotional state. Thomas Keating would say any emotion longer than 30 seconds is neurosis. So we want to be able to shift quickly. So it's mindful awareness, noticing that something's triggered us. And we've got that 5A point that we talked about last time to actually make that change and shift. And if someone's frustrating you, then you can think about a beautiful place you've been, your dog, your cat, music. It doesn't matter what it is. You just shift to gratitude and appreciation to be able to make that change. And then that's a change in your physiology. You're changing the way you're breathing. You're changing your heart rate. You're changing your neurochemicals. You're changing how your brain operates. You're allowing yourself, instead of flipping your lid, to have that socially integrated prefrontal cortex. And so you're communicating from your heart to your brain, in a way almost bypassing that area of stuckness that we try to change so often. And the reason we can't change it, despite thinking our way out of it, is because we have flipped our lid. We're disconnected. So the way to practice is to practice throughout the day. The DHEA is a youthful hormone. It only lasts 2 hours in your system. Oxytocin is produced by touch. It only lasts 2 hours in your system. So strategies that allow you to just keep producing little supercharges of oxytocin and DHEA throughout the day are going to help decrease that cortisol dump. So that's a way to move with self-awareness into spiritual awareness, that deeper level of ourself that we talked about last week. And then again, these are the strategies that cultures for thousands of years have used to be connected and happy and to feel joy. So laughing, singing, smiling, dancing. You can throw cold water in your face when you're upset. You can turn your shower to cold at the end of the shower in the morning to set yourself for the day. Gargling also does this. Yawning. There's actually a book by Andrew Newberg about how God wires the brain. And one of the things that he talks about is yawning. And if you have pets, you know how they yawn and stretch. They're actually resetting into that thrive state. And that's why they do that. So those things have been socially conditioned out of us, and we're trying to start using them again. I talked about placing that tongue on the roof of your mouth. And there's actually a almost like a sinus node when you place your tongue on your soft palate that actually calms your heart rate down. The email talked about Peter Levine and his work in somatic experiencing. This hug is one of his basic practices. So your right hand's on your heart, under your arm, your left hand's hugging yourself, and you go to that slow breath, tongue at the roof of your mouth, and you actually self-soothe with touch. And the same thing, we talked a little bit about going to heart coherence and placing your hand on your heart and actually feeling love or appreciation or gratitude for someone, something, or someplace is a way to bring yourself into heart coherence and allow that heart-brain connection to happen. And then you want to treat yourself like you would a child. I really liked that analogy of we're like wax as a child, and you know, then we can be molded. What we don't realize is we can be molded now too. And we would use the same love, care, and appreciation, you know, touching yourself, soothing yourself with your voice, maybe singing a lullaby or a song like you would sing a child, whatever you would do to calm that inner child, you can do, and that's going to create brain-body integration and spirit. So we talk about a window of tolerance. So when your buttons are pushed and you're overreactive, you're mad, you're stressed and in emotional distress and you feel like you can't calm down, you go to your breath, you go to the grounding practices with mindful awareness, you're able to get that mind-body integration, which moves you into that mentally engaged state. Your window of tolerance may be very, very small, but the more you do these practices, the wider that window becomes. And you probably already see that from the work that you've been doing, that you just can reframe things differently than you did before. And you've been able to already change your window of tolerance. The same thing occurs when we're depressed or unmotivated. Just kind of numb. Maybe that's how we feel with COVID. We can use the breathing practice, the mindful awareness, your centering prayer, welcoming prayer, all of the things that you've used, but the physical activity. So yoga, as was mentioned with the video, you're learning to breathe. So that slow inhale and slow exhale. You're learning to focus on your breath and integrate the breath to movement. You're learning to pay attention to your body. And as he mentioned, if you focus on that movement of your body, you're kind of giving yourself a break from all of the things that you're normally doing in your head. We also have fascia, which lines our whole body, and it's like saran wrap. So we have this saran wrap suit that shrinks when we're under stress or we've been injured. And when we do yoga, because the saran wrap goes fingertip to toe tip, cross body, front body, back body, we stretch that saran wrap in multiple planes. And that's why people become more flexible, because their muscles can now move at their proper length and their joints can also be more mobile because the saran wrap has changed. So all of that stuff is happening with yoga. And again, because we focus, we use a point called a drishti, where you focus your attention, you're developing your mental capacities of focusing as well with a yoga practice. So as we do these practices, we start with our heart and our breath, and we go into coherence there. And then we add in that renewing emotional state. So love, care, appreciation, patience, all those emotions that we talk about that we should have as a decent human being. And when we shift into coherence and a renewed emotional state, then the fascia changes and our physical flexibility and endurance changes, our mental awareness and ability to focus changes, and that also changes us spiritually because it's all connected. It's a Venn diagram. You can't change one without changing the other. So that's the beauty of the human condition, is that we can get stuck, but we can use a lot of different strategies to shift into a whole different state of being. And the more we shift, the more frequently we'll notice that we can just tolerate things differently than we did before. So one of the heart math strategies is called freeze frame. So within freeze frame, what you're doing is kind of putting the movie on pause. So just like you would think if you're watching a video, and so whatever is happening, you pause it, you shift to your breathing, you shift to your heart, you shift to that notion of a renewing feeling of love, care, appreciation, kindness. And you ask yourself in this situation, what's the appropriate response? So the example that I love is a patient with high blood pressure and all of these health problems said that it was her mother-in-law just drove her crazy. And she asked herself, doing this free frame practice, she acknowledged that she drove her crazy. She moved into appreciation of her mother-in-law and then asked herself, what's a better, more effective and efficient attitude, action, or solution? And she said, what came to her was just love her. And so that became her attitude when she dealt with her mother-in-law, and it changed their relationship. So you can use this heart strategy. There's one called quick coherence, where you use your imagination to go to your happy place or your inner resource, the place you've been in the past that you just love. And just thinking about that place and feeling like you're there again shifts you into that relaxation instead of contraction. So like my happy place is being under the Milky Way galaxy. The sky is so clear. Laying in the grass on the top of the hill with my kids, and I can hear them giggling and laughing. And then there are fireflies all around. So I can see the twinkling from the sky all the way to the ground, and I can recreate that feeling. When I go to my breath and recreate that feeling, it changes my biochemistry, just like that previous slide showed. So these are all simple things that we can do at that 5A place to shift out of stuckness. And when you do that, your heart is the first organ that develops, and it develops early. So it has more information about you as a being than your brain. Your brain doesn't fully develop till you're in your 20s. And then we also talked about this electromagnetic field that radiates from your heart. It goes out about 3 feet from your heart, but only 10 inches from your brain. So that's why you can be in a room with someone and feel their energy. And it's so powerful, even negative energy, positive energy, it doesn't matter. You're absorbing that energy. And if you can shift into heart coherence, then you're radiating that love, care, kindness from you, and you're changing the electromagnetic field of the world. So that's when we're talking about global consciousness. How do you help? You help by being in heart coherence and then radiating that from yourself. So in this situation, when we move out of the chaotic heartbeat into coherent heartbeat, the negative emotions start to become positive emotions. Our brain can think better. We're more intuitive. So if you look at the hierarchy that Keating talks about, intuition is there before unity with God. How do we become intuitive? We become intuitive by tapping into our heart. We boost our immune system and we change our whole physiology. So these are all things that are going to change just by shifting into those renewing emotions. And as we become, we optimize that state between our heart and our mind and our emotions, then our immune system, our hormones, our nervous system, all of those functions change. And this is really what's happening. We're radiating that coherence to other people. And people who are not coherent become more coherent. So in Richie Davidson's research, he does research on children, you know, 6 months to 6 years. And what he's seen is that they have that coherence. But again, your environment is like a petri dish. Whatever your environment is, if it's an incoherent environment, then you're going to feel that energy and have a hard time staying coherent. So that's why you have a choice today as to how to make your petri dish one where you can be heart coherent and in that level of spiritual awareness that we're talking about. So the heart-focused breathing, the quick coherence, the freeze frame, all of those can help you move into coherence and then help those around you become coherent. Same way if it's a child, you hug it, hold it, sing, do all the things that you would do, but you can do, nobody has to know, you know, that you're singing, "You Are My Sunshine" to yourself. It's a simple practice that you can do to change how you are at 5A. And then that internal dialogue, that Bermuda Triangle, you're actually shifting out of the Bermuda Triangle and moving from heart to head. So just to reinforce, they're connected. We want to be connected. And so with that in mind, then we're going to talk about moral injury. And this is, I think, a fascinating topic. It's been around forever with different names, soul damage. But in the military, we're starting to acknowledge it more and work more and more with it. So some of this will sound kind of military related. You know what? Maybe before we do that, I have one other practice that I want to do with you to get you out of your chairs and moving a little bit. And this is called grounding and gratitude. So just like, Vanderkirk talks about, you know, movement, yoga, and why he's so into that. There's another practitioner called David Verselli, and he has trauma release exercises. So he is actually teaching people how to release that cortisol and tension that you've held in your body. So if you've been in a car accident, if you've had a baby, if you've had surgery, you know that you have those tremors and that they're automatic because we are animals and that's a natural thing for us. But people put blankets on you, they tell you to calm down, they tell you not to shake. Anytime you're going into that shake, you should actually try to embrace it. Verselli has people do yoga and then actually teaches them practice to do when their muscles are tired so that they can go into that tremor state to release some of that stored trauma. And this practice is a subtle yoga practice also designed to help you connect your body and your heart. And it actually goes through all of your energy centers. So we talked about, security, control, and approval. Those are your lower energy centers. But your heart, we know your heart energy center. We can have love here or we can have grief here. Our throat, being able to speak our truth is really important. If we shift to gratitude as we think about trying to speak, maybe it'll be easier. So you can do this in your chair if you'd like, or you can stand. And with this practice, we'll go to our breathing again. So it's an inhale and an exhale, and you'll move through these energy centers. And then I'll guide you through that. So the first one, inhale, and then you exhale with your hands on your thighs. And again, you're using your voice. I'm grounded in gratitude. And then inhale, exhale to your below your belly button. I'm balanced in gratitude. Inhale, exhale. I'm empowered with gratitude. Inhale, exhale to your heart. I feel gratitude. Inhale, exhale to your throat. I speak gratitude. Inhale, exhale to your eyes or your third eye. I see gratitude. Inhale, arms overhead, and then bring them to the top of your head. I am gratitude. So we'll go through that a few more times. Inhale, exhale, I'm grounded in gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I'm balanced in gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I'm empowered with gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I feel gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I speak gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I see gratitude. Inhale, exhale, I am gratitude. So that's another example of combining breath and movement and voice and touch in a way to retrain your brain body and to align it. So what's moral injury? It violates our core values and beliefs and results in a dilemma. So we may have been engaged in this activity. We may have witnessed this activity. We may know about this activity or have experienced something that brought this about. So the unresolved dilemma is really the issue. When something happens, we try to explain why. And a lot of times we take responsibility for it. And especially if we're young and impressionable and we don't really know what's going on, it's that taking responsibility for something that was out of our control that can really set us up. So acts of betrayal by peers, leaders, self. You hear all the time, you know, he cheated on me, she cheated on them. It's an act of betrayal that goes against our core values. Violence, death or harm, hiding what you know and failing to report it sometimes can create that sense of a dilemma. Inability to have control to prevent death or suffering are mistakes. And you see this all the time in the military where, you know, the mission goes south or something goes wrong that you really didn't have any control of, but you still have to follow the orders. And that's what leads to the moral injury. But it's not a diagnosis. And that's a really important thing to know. You may have PTSD or depression or anxiety, but moral injury is different than that. It's not a diagnosis. A person with moral injury experiences regret, guilt, anger, sadness or grief, overwhelming loss, poor sleep, rumination, helplessness and hopelessness. or they may feel that things are unforgivable and that they deserve to be punished. And that's where our belief systems about our higher power are really important to acknowledge. And because of moral injury, we may avoid others out of fear. We don't want people to know about ourselves, so we hide. And individuals with moral injury judge that no one else would understand or accept what happened to them. And they live a life of secrecy, and that also leads to isolation. And it's almost like hiding from your real self because you don't want others to know, and you're afraid of the judgment that's going to come with that. So repair and restoration has to be multidimensional, just like you have learned with everything else. It has to happen in the body. So sleep, changing your stress response, diet, exercise, learning how to play, learning how to focus, learning how to enjoy things again is important. And then managing the guilt, the emotions, and the distorted thinking. The most important thing is being connected. And so they give examples of Vietnam, that the people in Vietnam, even though they went through all of the horrific things, never lost their sense of community and connection and love for one another. And they embraced the sorrows that they had and shared them. Spirituality, so meditation, act of forgiveness, getting out into nature, and then reconnecting with our divine indwelling are all ways to repair and restore after moral injury. But we have this bag of burden, and I'm just going to, so this be interesting to see how you receive it. This is the psychoeducation that we give to veterans to understand moral injury. So I'm just going to read you this bag of burden story. And I'd like you, I'm going to read three or four stories today, just embrace them with an open mind. So the first one is Bag of Burdens. And this is modified from a story that's used for therapists and children and their caregivers. There was once a rabbit named Jack that moved as slow as a turtle. He couldn't hop or run like other rabbits. And he was carrying a huge backpack that weighed him down. It hung near to the ground and looked like it was full of rocks. One day, a friend approached Jack. "You know, a rabbit's not meant to move as slow as a turtle. Why are you carrying that heavy backpack? Why don't you take it off?" Jack replied, "It's my burden bag. I never take it off." The friend said, "Not to sleep, not to eat, not to play." And Jack replied grouchily, "No, I told you, I never take it off." His friend was curious. "I've never seen a burden bag. What type of burdens do you carry in it?" Jack said, "I don't really remember everything that's in it because I've been collecting burdens for such a long time." As his friend requested, he opened the backpack and revealed some of what was in it. The burdens were stuffed into Ziploc bags and labeled stupid mistakes, total failure, family problems, imperfections, betrayals, rejections. Two of the heaviest burdens were unforgivable and unspeakable. His friend remarked that it's no wonder that Jack can't move and that he's as slow as a turtle. And they walked together until they found themselves at the shore of a beautiful lake. The sign at the lake said, "No fishing." "What is this place?" asked Jack. His friend said, "It's a bottomless lake. You can throw the burdens into the lake if you want to lighten your load. You watch them sink and you can't fish them back out." His friend added, "Some people call it God's pond, others forgiveness lake. It doesn't matter what you call it, but it's open to everyone." Jack was not easily convinced. He didn't know what he would do if he emptied his backpack and lightened his load. these memories are important. I can't throw them away like they don't matter. Of course they matter, said his friend, but you aren't throwing them away, the memories, just the weight and the pain of them. So you can lighten your load and move forward. Jack wasn't sure he even wanted to touch the unforgivable or unspeakable ones. He didn't know if he deserved to be free of them. His friend said, you don't have to deserve it. The lake is here. It's your choice. In that moment, Jack realized he had a choice: to remain weighed down by the burdens or to release them. With some fear and trepidation, as his friend encouraged him, Jack flung the first burden at a high arc over the lake. As it hit the lake's clear surface, small circles spread out about it, and the burden sank below the surface. Jack left the unspeakable, he felt an unexpected surge of relief. One by one, he threw the burdens into the lake. When Jack was done, at least for the time being, he was exhausted. Because as you know, it's hard work to let go of burdens. He asked, what do I do when I'm tempted to collect new burdens? His friend answered, that's bound to happen, because after all, you're only a rabbit. You might want to try collecting blessings. Blessings are things like carrots and lettuce and good memories and laughter and playing with other rabbits. Fill the backpack with blessings every day. Count your blessings. That will leave less room for burdens, and you can always come back to the lake. Jack came to realize that he was not meant to move as slow as a turtle. And perhaps you too will realize that you're meant to be what you're meant to be and find a way to lighten your load. So if you look at that list, the grudges, the unforgivable, the betrayals, you don't have to be a veteran. We've all been there. We've all felt these things, and it all affects how we interact with our world, just like you're learning. But we have choices now that can help us create change. So does anyone want to comment? I know last time I didn't give you guys voice soon enough. So does anyone want to comment on this burden bag, or what we've learned so far about shifting to heart coherence and choosing a different response to triggers as a way to heal? Yes, Rachel?
Hey, Christine. Hey, so I guess I'm trying to take what you are teaching and applying it to the work of Inner Christianity, uh-huh. where we recognize our real I and then the many eyes of self. And just the way I've seen you phrase it, and then thinking about the trauma work that I've done, is it almost feels like a shifting away from the trauma responses and into coherence. And I guess I think the way that I just want to share that's been helpful for me is bringing the coherence to the chaos is what shifted. Like, so like you talk about holding our inner child, right? So, or a part of the, you know, the, like treating ourselves like a young child. Well, I guess what's been helpful for me, just because of my trauma, like I've had a childlike part or, you know, side of myself that was very upset based on what boundaries were violated when she was younger, and have from a place of coherence, like it's kind of a both for me, I guess, from a place of coherence, allowing the release of that angry energy or anxiety. And to me, it's kind of like, I feel like it can be both in letting go and moving through those old pent up energies from traumatic events, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think the beauty of this is you don't have to talk about it. You don't have to tell people, you don't have to relive your story, which then just reinforces that Bermuda Triangle. You're using a completely different perspective.
It's not
just that love, care, and appreciation for yourself. And
right. Yeah, it's not reliving the story. It's whatever your body is showing you based on those experiences. And I guess I heard you use the word bypass, and I was thinking how, like, bringing the coherence to those chaoses, otherwise they'll just keep getting re-triggered. I don't know, for me has been most beneficial in finding a release and those, like, it's kind of a both rather than just from one end of the spectrum to the other. It's like bringing in a new experience to the shakiness, if you will.
Right. And if you think about the stories that we relive over and over again, it is like playing a movie. And the more we play that movie and the more we fire those signals, the more we're wiring into that. So why you can't turn the movie off, but you can change the channel. And Keating even talks about that. So it's an A movie when you're emotionally attached and you're involved and you're creating that sadness or that drama. And then it's a B movie when you become the director and you choose the script and you choose what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that self-observation piece that was talked about in the article that you had for this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lee?
It's Jackie. Today I was at a computer store, and a young man that waited on me was talking 90 to nothing. Very hyperactive, and I felt myself getting really hyper and also unable to listen to him because I was judging his hyperness. And so I immediately converted to the to radiating coherence by curling my tongue to the top of my mouth, roof of my mouth, breathing slowly in and out with my breath. And I had to do that maybe for 5 minutes. And I noticed how I was calming down and could hearing. And then he shifted and started calming down and not as hyper. So thank you for this practice. It was wonderful.
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to share again. Stephanie? I'm not saying it right, but would you like to speak?
Yeah, it'll just be really quick. It's kind of related to what Jackie said. On your first slide, happiness and excitement were on the high end for the autonomic nervous system. And I'm just trying to figure that out. It was also on the positive end, but what does that mean for us? Can happiness and excitement also be something like a danger? I don't know a better word for it, but I'm sure you can understand what I'm asking.
Well, I guess it depends on the gen, you know, there are a lot of people who go to substances, and we'll talk about that, and they can get their happiness and their high or whatever from that, which is distorted. So we're talking about more like play or getting into nature, or, you know, if you do a hobby or a craft or something that just fills you up with joy, then those are the type of strategies. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. They say we're all addicted. We just choose the addiction. So, you know, with exercise or whatever it is, it's trying to just shift into an emotion that you would have if you saw your best friend, or if you were, you know, in a beautiful place on vacation or whatever. Those feelings that you can, so it's not thinking about them, it's actually feeling them in your body, taking your body state into those spaces. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. So we talked about the burden bag, and now we want to talk about what we do, and that's kind of like floating in quicksand. So I'm going to read you another story. Once there was a man who was floating in quicksand out in the middle of nowhere, keeping his head above the water and trying to survive. He'd not seen the quicksand in time to stop the fall. He regretted falling in and wished that he could retrace his steps to avoid the delay. He said to himself, "It's all my fault. I wasn't paying enough attention." But that was done. And now he was resigned to stay there and float in the quicksand. He knew not to struggle or panic because that might pull him under. No one passed by, but since he fell in, he was starting to lose hope. He feared that he would be stuck there and that his strength would give way. Then he heard a voice. "Hey, what's going on down there?" Someone had finally come by. The man replied in an irritated voice, "Isn't it obvious? I'm floating in quicksand, treading water, keeping myself alive. Might you give me a hand?" The stranger pondered as he viewed the situation. "Yes, I can give you a hand, or you can carefully turn around and use the ladder rope that's right behind you." He'd missed that solution. Right behind him was a ladder rope, so he probably was not the first person who had faced the quicksand dilemma. Life is a little like this. Something unexpected happens and you find yourself stuck. You can survive by floating in quicksand, but if you're ready to move in a new direction, you can find a whole new point of view. These are the things that keep us stuck in quicksand. Avoidance, over control or under control, and we're guilty of probably both of those. Isolation, substance abuse. Sometimes we use spirituality and faith as a vehicle that we get stuck in, and self-esteem issues and trust issues. Does anyone have thoughts about those? Or the quicksand analogy? So I think the biggest thing I've learned from working with veterans is that we don't even know that this is what our problem is. We don't even know how ingrained our core beliefs are in us and how long we've been floating in the quicksand and how things build up over a lifetime. So,
are you muted?
Any thoughts? All right. Oops. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the monster within. So I'm going to read you another story. So this is a young wizard talking to an old wizard. And the young wizards really wanted to learn everything and become wise. His teacher was the wisest wizard of all. And he saw the young man's potential, but he was cautious. "Know your limits and be careful of what can happen if you feed or listen to the monster within." "The monster within," said the young wizard. "Yes, we all have monsters within. They are born out of hard times that bring anger, pain, and sorrow. We learn to live with them. Sometimes, when you least expect it, they will tempt you to let them out. They'll promise to fight your battles, and they'll wreak havoc. They'll create revenge and fix your problems. The old wizard added, they lie to you and are very convincing. The truth is that they seek to destroy if you let them out. They care nothing for you and are only interested in their own power. I'm wiser than that, said the young wizard. I will not listen to the voices of the monsters within. I'll study hard and one day become the best wizard in the kingdom. That's good to hear, said the wise wizard. Even during hard times, it is better to pursue peace and reconciliation than hate and revenge. The young wizard worked hard in his studies and practiced his crafts. Then he reached an age, as all young wizards do, when hard times came his way. He became angry and frustrated, and he heard the voice of the monster within. You deserve better than this. Let me out, and I'll help you. With my help, you'll be stronger and more powerful than ever before. The young wizard forgot the advice of the old wizard. He raised his wand in outrage and waved his wand forcefully. Out of the tip of the wand, the monster emerged. The huge, horrible, red-eyed, ugly, sniffling monster sneered, free at last, and born of your anger, I will destroy your village, and it will be your fault. You foolish wizard, you will regret this as long as you live. The monster tossed aside the young wizard and laughed as he began to wreak havoc and devastation in the kingdom. The young wizard was dismayed at the monster's unleashed power. What have I done? The kingdom is suffering and it's my fault. He cried out in anguish, Master Wizard, come help me and fix this. I've unleashed the terrible monster. He heard the voice of the wise teacher. This is a monster of your own making and only you can fix it. You know what you must do and you will find the answer. The young wizard thought, I must run from the monster. Surely it will follow me and leave the village behind. So the wizard ran over hill and dale and the monster pursued. The wizard was deep inside the dark cave, and each time he ran, the monster found him. You can run and hide, sneered the monster. I'm part of you, the monster of your own making, and I will sniff you out and destroy you. So the wizard stopped running. I know what he must do. I will destroy him. Surely that's the answer. I'll call him out and kill him, and that will be the last of this. So with courage, the young wizard called the monster out. Here I am, he cried. Come get me. He pulled his sword and faced the monster. Once again, the young wizard heard the voice of the teacher. Killing the monster is not the answer. You can't destroy a monster of your own making. It is part of you. If you try to kill him, you will destroy yourself. The young wizard shouted in a defiant voice, I will kill the monster or I will die trying. The wizard stood tall and proud as the monster charged. He held his sword high, ready to fight. Then just before the monster reached him, the wizard knew what he must do. He dropped his sword and opened his arms. The monster ran into his embrace with a great roar of anguish and pain. And then the monster met the embrace with shocking surprise and was gone. The wizard was dazed and amazed at what had happened. Well done, said the voice of the old wizard. When you release the monster of your own making, you can't run from it or hide from it, and you can't destroy it. When you face it and embrace it, you will finally be whole. I wish I could say that the young wizard never failed or made the wrong choices. But when he did so honestly and with less arrogance than before. He knew that he wasn't perfect. He lived with good intentions, forgave himself for what he had done, and did his part to keep peace. I hope you too will find the courage to face and embrace the monsters within so that they lose their power to wreak havoc in your kingdoms. So how do we do that? Radical accepting, accepting yourself and your circumstances, carrying that burden bag, releasing it. So unlocking yourself from what we call the chains of sorrow. We create a prison and we live in that prison, just like we live in the Bermuda Triangle. So forgiveness is the way to release the burdens and to remove your pain and to feel compassion for yourself and for others. So it's like weaving a tapestry. We're out of time. One more short story about the tapestry. So it's similar to what you learned in those lectures, that we have this tapestry, and you can say, I hate the dark threads. I don't want to look at them anymore. I don't want to look at my story. I don't want to remember. I want to get rid of those. If you get rid of them, then you destroy the tapestry. You destroy the beauty of who you are and how those experiences have formed you over your lifetime. So it's looking at the good and the bad and seeing it as a whole, and that the bright threads are just going to sag and there's going to be holes in your tapestry if you remove the dark threads that you're unhappy with. So all of it is important as to who you are as a person. And the more you can embrace that and move towards your essence, knowing that what happened happened, and it has helped formed you, but now you have choices you can make to create a change within yourself. Okay, so necessary for contemplative life: understanding, love, and patience. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. If you would be kind enough to stop the sharing, we can see one another and say goodnight. What a blessing you've given us.
Sorry. Here it is.
There you are. Yes, many things to ponder into, take into our hearts, and for the next week to practice, to reflect, to live into, allow ourselves to be loved. So let us join together in praying aloud wherever we are, a prayer of affirmation, the prayer of God's love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace.